Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Mark Reardon.
The real truth is that Joe Biden has left us a dumpster fire.
Every time there is substantive stuff,
Mark Reardon,
to talk about in the world of politics, Donald Trump's name is the headline.
People decided to return Donald Trump to power.
In the first term, everybody was fighting me. In this term, everybody wants to be my friend.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Well, let me tell you something right now that should be apparent. If you make the open of the Mark Reardon Show, that Scott Jennings just made the show open here, that's when you know you've made it. Not when you're appointed to the LA Times editorial board or anything like that, like Jennings. Not when you're on CNN every night, but when you're on the Mark Reardon Show open,
woo!
You've really achieved something in life. Yeah, we got new opens because, you know, Senator Kennedy saying the Biden administration sucks. Well, that's not going to fly after Monday, will it? Because the Biden administration has sucked, but
I was going to say
no
it's still
longer,
true.
It is. Thank you, Sue.
It's just the wrong tense.
That's exactly right. How is everyone today? It's actually pretty nice out.
Yes.
Can I tell you something weird? I don't know if other people do this, but I had parked the car because I knew I went out this morning.
You do this.
Now, wait a second. You don't even know what I'm going to say.
I know. I just assumed.
I parked the car. Good assumption. I parked the car outside of the garage because the sun was shining. So I got in the car and literally I was opening the windows because I was so warm inside the car when I started driving. Do people do that? Like when it's I couldn't crank the air high enough to get cooled off, even though it was only like.
Tell me what you're doing. You're doing what?
I had to open the window on Highway 44 just when I was heading in.
No, I totally get that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I like to put heat on my toes and then open the window.
Yeah, that's kind of how it, but it is a beautiful day, and we're going to get a little warming here. And then I looked kind of ahead. Do you know what's going on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday?
What?
Back into the single digits and stuff like that.
I don't
want to
talk about it.
Now, I'm heading out to the desert, but I'm not getting a lot of relief out there, but it's not going to be 9 degrees on Monday morning when I come back. By the way, I screwed something up, Sue. Maybe I'm just going to take Tuesday off, too. I called Chris Kerber earlier today to check in on some things, and I said, yeah, I'm heading off to Vegas tomorrow. He goes, oh. We're flying in there on Saturday night. I'm like, wait a second. What? I hope you're not going to tell me you play on Sunday because I'm still going to be there Sunday. No, they play on Monday. I didn't even think of checking the schedule. Rick's a season ticket holder for the Golden Knights. I blame him as well, my buddy out there. But yeah, I might even get to hang with Kerber. I told him I'll come down to the Strip and buy you lunch or something like that. He can extort a lunch out of me on the Strip on Sunday. I think that's fair too.
Yeah.
So, but you know, if my flight gets delayed on Monday, guys, and I'm not back, then that's why. Because I went and saw. The St. Louis Blues play the Golden Knights. We got a lot coming up here. Remember what I said yesterday about the ceasefire, Sue?
That it would not last?
Well, I've followed a lot of ceasefires. I started anchoring newscasts in the 1980s, and I've you know read a lot of copy about Middle East peace. And the one thing I know, I'm not being an expert, geopolitical expert on anything really, or Middle East peace, that ceasefires never last. And this one really has never even really taken effect. There's some issues with it. We're going to get into that. Josh Hammer is going to join us, who is one of the Newsweek senior editors at large. Of course, you hear him every Saturday here on 97.1 FM Talk. I had not heard about this thing, this Red Note thing. I'm watching Fox this morning. Do you know this Red Note thing, Sue?
I don't think so.
Okay, Fred, had you heard about it until today?
No, not until you told me.
So TikTok might be gone, right? We were waiting to see what the Supreme Court's going to do on that. There's another app called Red Note.
Oh, I did hear about this.
Which happens to be owned by, you know, China as well. And that's the most downloaded free app in Apple's App Store right now. The thing that's confusing to me is if you're on TikTok or like I'm a Twitter person, ex-formerly Twitter. All right. And I like Instagram, too. Oh, by the way, Oreo Smorio the Bunny and his account on Instagram. We got a lot of followers and I thank everyone. But if you'd like to follow my emotional support bunny, he's on Instagram now. I'm at Mark Talk, M-A-R-K-T-A-L-K. That's my account. Oreos is Oreo Smorio the Bunny. That's his handle. What was I saying, though? I can't remember
see,
what
that's
I was
what
saying.
Happens. I got
about Fred, Red Note.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks,
but
Fred.
Okay, so thank you, Fred, because I'm telling you, I wouldn't have come back to that. I'm my brain works that way. How can you go from some of these people on Instagram and these other platforms, they have hundreds of thousands, millions of followers. So how all of a sudden you go to a platform that's new and follow people and find, I just don't get it.
I don't know. Maybe they have the same name across platforms.
If you do that, you're going to, if you follow 2,000 people on Instagram or on, you know, and then are you going to go through and say, hey, these are all the same.
Probably not.
Is baffling to me, but we're going to get George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet on a little bit later in the 4 o'clock hour. We got Kilmeade coming up. By the way, big news on Kilmeade. He is coming to the factory here in St. Louis. Brian told me about this about 5 weeks ago. He was asking about the venue when I knew about it. I was raving about it because it is awesome. And it's March 22nd. It's a Saturday night. So that's a great night. The 97.1 team will be there as well. We miss Brian this December. He's been with us the last couple of years. He's the most generous. I mean, this is a guy, he works harder than anyone I know in this business.
Oh,
he really does. He takes nothing for granted. And we've seen this in person. When Brian comes, he'll stay till the very last person gets a book signed or wants to say hi. He works his butt off. And he loves St. Louis. And he's very, very, you know, honored that he's on 97.1 FM talking in the St. Louis market with his talk show. So we're going to have him on in the 5 o'clock hour. And also, we got Senator Eric Schmidt, who, by the way, played golf with Trump recently. I got to ask about that, right?
Yeah.
You don't ever want to beat, like, I wonder if you have to miss a putt or something like that, because you can't beat the president, can you?
I think he's pretty good by now, too. So I don't know if you really
Schmidt's
have to down
good
it.
Too.
Oh, all right.
No, Schmidt's, I think he's a pretty good golfer. We've lost a couple of major figures in American pop culture today. David Lynch was one of them, director David Lynch. He did a lot of great movies. He did the TV show Twin Peaks, the movie Twin Peaks. I loved Blue Velvet with Dennis Hopper and Isabella Rossellini, one of my favorite movies of all time. Fred's freaking out because I was pulling some of the cuts from that from this
chilling.
Earlier. Yeah, because it's like Dennis Hopper's so weird
In
that movie. What did I label those?
Blue Velvet?
Oh, Blue Velvet, yeah. Oh, duh. I don't see him in there, though, Fred. That's the problem. I got no Blue Velvet, so that might have been something that I screwed up. But we also lost Bob Uecker today at the age of 90. And I worked with Bob in Milwaukee for almost 10 years when I was on WTMJ. He, of course, was the voice of the Brewers. And I don't even know how many people realize that he's still been the voice of the Brewers for all of these years. And Oh, yeah.
Like last year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, he's been in the booth. So we thought, you know, Mike Shannon toward the end really did not sound very good and got sick. Bob, I'd have to check on this. And my friend Bill Michaels is going to join us a little bit later. I thought about 4 years ago, before the pandemic, maybe the timing's off, he had a little brush with cancer. And I think a lot of us thought we were going to lose him at that time. But he came back strong as ever and has been broadcasting the Brewer games. Of course, he became legendary because of his appearances on The Tonight Show. And I want to start with some of this because it's so classic. Producer emeritus Dave Klein texted me with the news this morning. I had not heard of Bob's passing. And he said, this is interesting. So this is the third anniversary also of Norm MacDonald's death.
Oh.
And we love Norm MacDonald.
Yeah,
right?
He was great.
So let me play a little audio here of Mr. Uecker. But there's a great story from Norm MacDonald that we've shared before that has to be shared. So I mentioned, and look, I'm just going to say this. I wasn't close with Bob, but I knew him when I was there, and we worked together. And I fished in his fishing tournament every year. He did a great salmon tournament. We would do these celebrity benefits at Miller Park. I had dinner with Bob several times. You know, Sue, like one of those occasions where you're at a benefit or something like that. There was an annual baseball dinner for the Brewers that I was always a part of. So I never had – I don't want to make it seem like I was sitting, you know, at a table, just me and Bob Uecker, but I was there with all the TMJ folks. And there's just literally nobody that I've encountered in my personal life, and I've been around Hollywood types and comedians, that is as naturally funny as Bob Uecker.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he used to do, and I'll give you a couple examples, and I think we had this with Jack Buck and Shannon. You know, I don't know if you saw, Fred, let me backtrack here, because there was a great tweet from John Ziegler today, who's a big baseball fan. And John, my friend in L.A., who was on a couple nights ago, he has great appreciation for broadcasters. And he said this, and I think, Fred, you would agree with this. Here are the local announcing icons of the last golden age of baseball. Bob Uecker, Vin Scully, he puts Jack Buck at number three, Phil Rizzuto, Harry Callison, Richie Asburn, Lindsey Nelson, Bob Murphy, Ernie Harwell, Dick Enberg, Harry Carey, of course, here and in Chicago, Jack Brickhouse, he was the Cubs announcer for a long time. I kind of grew up listening to Jack Brickhouse, even though I was not infected with the Cubs virus, as I like to say. But John said they're all gone now, never to be replaced. I mean, these are legendary broadcasters. They just don't make them like that anymore.
They're storytellers.
Right. So yeah. What Bob would do when I moved to Milwaukee in 1997. They were still in the American League. The team was not very good, even in the early 2000s when Miller Park came about. They had a change in ownership. Bud Selig's, Bud owned the team. He became commissioner of baseball. His daughter, Wendy, and her husband, Laurel, then took over ownership as Bud had to step out. And then they sold the team years later to a guy by the name of Mark Anastasio. And they've had quite a lot of success, as we know, in the division. But if you'd be in spring training, Uecker knew that the games didn't really matter. So he would tell stories. The same principle applied to August, typically, because the Brewers were usually out of anything and in last place, or at least approaching last place, at the end of the summer. So Bob knew that the listeners would still want to be entertained, and he would share story after story after story. How he remembered these, Shannon was real good at this too. They would always tell these baseball stories, and with Bob, he would embellish, and you know, there would always be humor, and we'll give some examples of that. But the guy was really amazing. He would do, so my friend Jim Powell, who went to Atlanta, and he was a Braves broadcaster for a while, Jim was Bob's broadcast partner. And when Montreal was in the National League, before it went to Washington, right, every time the Brewers would play in Montreal, Uecker would do, as I remember it, it was like an entire inning in a French-Canadian accent.
Oh,
and
my
it was
gosh.
Just one of the damn funniest things that I had ever heard. And
like a different character.
Yeah, yeah. But like, he would call the whole inning like that. And Jimmy couldn't even, you know, bear to get through the broadcast because he was laughing so much. So let me go back with some memories here. He was on, I mentioned Johnny Carson loved him, right? He was on Carson about 100 times.
Were you injured like a lot of ball players? They always seem to retire because of injuries. The elbow goes or the legs go. Were you plagued by any injuries when you played at all?
I think for me it was more my hands than anything else.
Well, you were a catcher.
Yeah. You know, you go in a bar after a ball game and you're sitting there 3-4 hours popping a few, and sooner or later somebody's going to step on your hands. You know.
So it was always deadpan. You didn't know what lane he was taking you down.
This, John, you remember when I talked about catching the knuckleball?
Right.
The easiest way to catch it was to wait until it stopped rolling and just pick it up.
I see, and there it is on the ground.
See the.
You're looking around for the ball there in that middle picture.
Then the umpire finally picked it up and gave it to me, and I made my score.
So this was this is one of our favorites. Fred, you've heard this before. I know this story as well,
right.
But it's just epic because it involves the Cardinals in a picture from when Bob was on the Cardinals.
Obviously, you know, we get a shot of it as a.
This is
a team.
This is a team picture that once a year they have these team picture days is what they are. And on this particular day, this cost Bob Gibson, one of the great pitchers in baseball, it cost him and I a couple $100. They had taken the picture and they had proofed it and everything, and then brought it back to the ballpark before they finally caught that scene there.
What? Can you come a little closer on that?
Well, Bob and I are holding hands.
Oh, it's so funny. And you look at the picture, and there they are.
A close shot of that. You certainly are, aren't you?
Yeah, and he gave a great speech at the Hall of Fame as well, and I might get to some of that a little later. But I have to play the Norm MacDonald story, because we're going to remember Norm MacDonald here as well. Bob was on with Carson many, many times. He loved Letterman, too, and he was on Letterman's show for a long time. Obviously, people know him from so many things. Mr. Belvedere, he did the Miller Lite commercials, it must be in the front row. When Miller Park was built, they had some obstructed view seating way back in center field in the upper deck, and they call them the Uecker seats, and they were like $3 a pop. But Norm MacDonald was very close with Uecker, and boy, there's another guy, one of the funniest guys I've ever really listened to. I've never met Norm MacDonald, but this is a great story.
Voice of the Milwaukee Brewers.
Well, Bob Uecker is the is one of my best friends. He's a great man. I know Artie told a story when he was here, and Bob was not too thrilled with that. But
it's Artie Lang you're talking
Artie
about.
Artie Lang, yeah. But Bob is a very, very funny man, and I often go in the booth with him, you know.
Oh, sure.
So one time we were there, and John Fogerty was in the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, a fortunate son, you know. So John Fogerty was there. So Bob Uecker is a very interesting guy. He thinks of everybody as the same. He doesn't think of people as stars or anything like that. He's a very down-to-earth guy. So he was talking to me, and he says, "Hey, man, you know that guy?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "That's John Fogerty, rock and roll singer." So I go, "Yeah, yeah, I know who it is." He goes, "Yeah, man." He goes, "But I played in a golf tournament with him." He goes, "You probably think of him as some that likes to bite the heads off of chickens, but this guy can...
That's exactly how I think of him.
This guy can get it out of the sand trap like nobody's...
This is so, I love the Letterman laugh.
Hell of a set of pipes on him. He goes, "Come the seventh inning stretch, I'll have him up here. He'll sing for you." So I said, no, Bob, don't do that. Like, don't have him come up and sing for me, please, you know? He goes, "What's the matter, man? Don't you even know who he is?" He got all mad. So I go, "Yes, Bob, I know who he is. He did Creedence Clearwater Revival."
Yeah.
He goes, "Yeah, he did all that."
So, and then, by the way, that is a great impersonation because Bob was always like that. Like, "Hey, buddy," like, you would have thought, and again, I'm not telling you, I wasn't that close with him, but I work with him. He's like, "Hey, buddy, how you doing, Mark?" You know, he would always be your best friend in the moment. There's no doubt about that. And he just made people laugh on and on. He was a great baseball guy, too, and a great baseball broadcaster. And he was very fond of St. Louis and his memories here as well. So we got to take a few moments here and look back this afternoon at the life of Bob Uecker. We'll have my friend Bill Michaels. Bill and I worked together at the same time at WTMJ. Bill's now a syndicated host up in Wisconsin. So we'll visit with him in the next hour. Take a break. We're getting rolling here on a Thursday. Oh, my goodness. I almost said Wednesday. It's my Friday. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that, guys. Josh Hammer's coming up.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, this was an interesting moment yesterday after the current president, who's about to be shown the door, is announcing the ceasefire deal, asked this question.
Thank you. Folks, credit for this, Mr. President, you or Trump?
Is that a joke? Oh, thank you.
No, I think the answer is you're a joke. Tony Blinken, credit's not important.
The important thing is not who gets the credit. The important thing is getting the results. And that's exactly what we've gotten. And as I've said, the deal that was agreed is based on the proposal that President Biden put out months ago in May.
John Kirby.
The comments by President-elect Trump, particularly his support for this deal and making it public that he supported this deal, did send a strong signal to everybody in the region, including Hamas.
Ooh, sounds like maybe a little credit, and then there's Matt Miller.
When it comes to the involvement of President-elect Trump's team, it has been absolutely critical in getting this deal over the line.
So they don't want to give him credit, but he certainly earns some credit here. Josh Hammer back with us, senior editor-at-large at Newsweek. He hosts the Josh Hammer Show every Saturday here at 1 p.m. on 97.1 FM Talk. Josh, welcome back. How are you? We could say Happy New Year as well.
Mark, a belated Happy New Year to you, my good friend. Always a pleasure to join you on these magnificent airwaves here.
So I appreciate it. Where are we? You know, one of the things, and I'm not an expert on this stuff, which is why we tap into folks like you. But what I have said a couple of times is in my decades covering news in the Middle East in particular, when there's a ceasefire, it usually doesn't last very long. And this one may not have even lasted 24 hours because there were some snags. What do we know right now? And what are your thoughts about this deal?
Well, Mark, when I woke up this morning, it looked like the deal was on the thinnest ice imaginable. It looked like Prime Minister Netanyahu was saying that he was holding off on submitting it to his cabinet because Hamas was trying to change the terms of the deal on the way out the door. They were trying to maybe swap out some hostages for others. My best guess is that Hamas probably realized that they don't have enough hostages who are actually alive relative to what they had told negotiators. That's at least my guess as to what was going on. But as of a few hours ago, which is the latest information I've seen, it looks like the deal is back on. Now, having said that, there has not exactly been a formal announcement or anything. There hasn't been like a Netanyahu press conference or anything of the sort to announce that it is happening. I think it's a bad deal, Mark. I'm not going to put lipstick on a pig and pretend like it's anything other than a bad deal. I definitely think it's a bad deal. When you look at the actual numbers here, Israel is set to get 33 hostages back, dead or alive. We have no idea how many of those 33 are even going to be alive versus coming home in body bags. And then in exchange for that, they're going to have to give up. The number that I saw last night was 3,000, nearly 3,000 Palestinian Arab terrorists, jihadists who are in Israeli prisons. 1,000 of those 3,000, so a third of them, have been arrested since October 7th. Roughly 250 of them are currently serving life sentences in Israeli prisons for being the most hardened of jihadists that you could possibly imagine. And it's worth recalling, Mark. You know, I know you've been in this business for a while. Back in 2011, there was the Gilad Shalit prisoner swap. This was a lone Israeli soldier who was patrolling the area near Gaza. He was taken in by Hamas in their earlier years of governing the Gaza Strip. And the pressure on Netanyahu back then, 14 years ago, was overwhelming to bring home Gilad Shalit. And Israel gave up over 1,000 terrorists to get their one soldier back. It's worth remembering that one of those terrorists that they gave up was a younger jihadist by the name of Yahya Sinwar, who 12 years later would become the mastermind of October 7th. So,
right.
Mark, I can't help but wonder how many Sinwars is Israel about to give up yet again?
So what can you do about that at this point? I mean, Biden is very proud of the deal. Trump and their team seem to be pleased that it's happening as well. I know that there were some snags, but can you improve upon it, I guess, in the time being or for the time being or moving forward here in the next couple of weeks?
The short answer is probably not.
Yeah.
It looks like this thing is going to go through. Now, the million-dollar question, Mark, is what does this actually mean as far as the end of the conflict in Gaza? Is this it? Because if this is actually it, if, God forbid, this is actually the end of hostilities, if the IDF is really just going to pick up there, if that's the case, then Hamas is weakened, but Hamas remains in power. And that means that Israel has lost the war, because they announced very clearly at the beginning of the war that the aim of this war, well, there are two aims. One is retrieval of the hostages, but the other war aim, in my opinion, the more important war aim, was to defeat Hamas as a military and political institution in Gaza. So if Hamas remains in power, then the war is over and Israel has lost. Now, the real question is this going to be a ceasefire just for 5-6 weeks, which is roughly the time duration that the media has been reporting?
Yeah.
And if after that, can Netanyahu summon the political capital and, frankly, the goodwill of the incoming Trump administration to actually send troops back into Gaza to finish a job? That is a TBD situation that is very much to be determined. I don't know what the answer is going to be there. I think what's actually happening here, Mark, if I can kind of psychoanalyze for a second, I think what's happening is Donald Trump wants his Ronald Reagan 1980 moment. So Jimmy Carter had the Tehran hostage crisis in the final 400 plus days of his presidency, the Americans at the embassy in Tehran. Ronald Reagan comes into power day one of his presidency and the hostages are all freed. I think that Donald Trump is probably going for a similar photo op, a similar hostage release, and understandable for sure. It's a brilliant moment. It's a chance for him to claim a huge victory. I guess I just can't help but ask, at what cost is that victory?
Well, this was a different perspective, and it's something that I had certainly thought about in the past, but I had not been reminded of this aspect until today. So I'm listening to Fox this morning, and there's a guy by the name of Dan Senior, and I don't really know. Dan's got a podcast. I'm not sure about him, but he mentioned this about just the young Israeli, you know, men and women who have been called into service because you have a draft situation. You're compelled into military service.
Israel has a universal conscription. Most, not all, but most Israelis serve. These Israelis that have been asked to serve, those that are serving in their military years, 18, 19, 20, or those who are reservists, people in their mid-20s and mid-30s that have been plucked out of their daily lives as teachers and construction workers and tech entrepreneurs, and they have children and spouses at home, and they've been sent off to fight for a couple hundred days.
You know, Josh, I will say, I knew that. I've known all that, but I had not been reminded of that in a while, and that has to be something that is wearing on families all across that region.
No doubt about that. There is conscription in Israel. Most men will end up serving 2 to 3 years at least in the military. For women, it will be about 18 months to 2 years or so, and Israel's a small country. We're talking here of a country of 9 million people at the most. Not all of them serve. But, you know, when Israel's losing soldiers, and in recent days, it's true. There were some terrible recent days where there's one day where 4 soldiers were killed in northern Gaza. There's another day where 3, 4, or 5 were killed. At this point, the total death toll from the Israeli side, just from a soldier perspective, is, if it's not north of 400, then it's right around the 400 mark, which might not sound like a ton, but again, it's a very small country, and that's actually the most soldiers that they've ever lost in a war since the Yom Kippur War a half century ago, 1973. So it's absolutely taking a toll. It's been going on for well over a year now. But again, when you have something happen like October 7th, I mean, you kind of have to go back and think about what happened on October 7th there. This was a pogrom the likes of which Adolf Hitler could only dream of. I think some of what actually happened on October 7th, Mark, and I don't say this lightly. I mean, I say this as someone who was speaking to you while on my desk. I have at all times a rock from the crematorium at Auschwitz that a rabbi gave to me years ago. So I don't say this lightly. But I think some of these sick, sadistic murders, the butchering of babies, all of that, this is truly the stuff that the Nazis in the forests of Poland really could have only dreamed of. So when that happens, and then when you announce that Israel cannot continue to exist or to live with Hamas at its side, then you really just have to finish the job. And look, Israel does have a conscription military. It's obviously taking a toll, but it's a very nationalistic culture over there. And I think the people who live there and who fly the flag proudly, they understand what they're signing up for at the end of the day as well.
So in order for this to work, at least, Josh, if it works in the long term, you have to have a new governing body. It can't be Hamas in Gaza, right? So what is the future of Gaza? That's really not anything that's discussed in the framework of this deal.
It's not, and I don't pretend to have the exact answer. I'm not sure that anyone has the exact answer. I'll tell you what would be an ideal situation or an ideal pragmatic situation. I have an ideal situation, which is not going to happen. But I think the ideal pragmatic situation is you get some of the more moderate Arab states, such as the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, maybe the Saudis, who kind of go in on some sort of consortium to try to rebuild Gaza. Now, it's worth remembering, Mark, that when Israel withdrew from Gaza back in 2005, people were describing Gaza as a would-be Singapore on the Mediterranean. That was how it was described in the media at the time, because it's beautiful real estate. It's gorgeous beachfront Mediterranean property there. There is tremendous, tremendous potential there. So that would be a terrific possibility if there is any chance whatsoever it could happen. I think the slightly more, even more realistic than that possibility is that you basically work, it ends up being almost like a Puerto Rico Guam-like situation where Israel maintains military control of the barriers, including the important Philadelphia corridor, which is the Gaza border with Egypt in the south. but moderate Palestinian Arab factions have a very, very large degree of autonomy on a city-by-city or council-by-council basis. And that's going to involve a lot of vetting. You're going to have to make sure that there is some sort of de-Hamasification process for the city leaders and the council members and whatnot. They're easier said than done. But yeah. Something along those lines is probably the most likely scenario.
So complicated. Josh Hammer is here, Newsweek senior editor-at-large. Are you going to the inauguration on Monday?
Mark, I'm not, but for a very good reason, my friend, which is that I believe since the last time you and I spoke, I became a father, actually. We had our first child on December 13th. Esther Miriam Hammer is just over 1 month old, so I'm kind of limiting my travel at the moment to assist my wife with the little one.
I had somehow missed that. I knew that there was a baby on the way as a big girl dad myself with a little girl about to turn 10. Good for you. Congratulations. You are going to love it. How much fun is that? Well, that's great. And we got excitement in Monday. Because you're not going to be there, let's just talk about the transition here. Trump, I've asked this to several people, Josh, and, you know, our friend Will Scharf, your friend, I know Will pretty well, too, is going to the administration. There does seem to be a different tone from not only Republicans, but Democrats and people inside the swamp. Now, I don't know what that's going to mean for the long term, but boy, they seem to be really getting down to work. You've had success with these confirmation hearings this week. We got another Florida person. You're down there in Florida. Tell me about the person, Ashley Moore, that DeSantis has put up as the new senator from Florida.
So, I mean, this administration, Mark, is stacked with Floridians. It's pretty wild, actually. I mean, you have Marco Rubio coming in as Secretary of State.
Yeah.
You have Michael Waltz, who's coming in as the NSA, as the National Security Advisor. Pam Bondi is going to be the Attorney General of the United States. It's really just wild stuff. So yeah, I mean, this was a huge debate here in Florida going on for a while now, is that who's going to replace Marco Rubio in the Senate. So the favorite all along ends up being the pick. It's Ashley Moody, the Attorney General of Florida. She's a good pick. She's a solid Attorney General. She is typically one of the leaders when it comes to the red state Attorney General coalition that have tag teamed over the past few years to go up against the Biden administration. I mean, is she kind of a... Yeah, is she Ken Paxton in Texas in terms of like the public facing, you know, fire breathing aggression? Maybe not, but she's a very, very solid legal mind, which, you know, as a lawyer myself, I very much appreciate. I actually saw that she had a post on X. By the way, Mark, it feels very odd to say a post on X, not a tweet, but
I know.
But I saw a post on X from her earlier today talking about how Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito are the gold standards, and she wants to get on the Senate Judiciary Committee to make sure that we have great justices, great judges. I love all this talk, obviously, there. So I think it's another solid pick by Ron DeSantis there, but she's probably going to get a primary challenge in 2026 when that seat is up, at least by Corey Mills, who is one of the young Florida congressmen in the delegation. He's already announced that he wants to run for it. So she's not going to have an easy path to re-election to a full term, but for now, I think it's a very solid pick.
Well, Trump really hates women, though. Pam Bondi, Ashley here, you know, he really does hate women. More and more proof of that. I'm excited. I'm excited about the new administration. I'm excited about some work getting done. I'm excited about DOGE, right? A lot of things to be interested in, but they've got a ton of work. On the confirmation hearings front, do you sense that there's any danger for Tulsi Gabbard?
No, I'm pausing a little bit because I guess if there's anyone for whom there could ever be a possibility, Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr. and Cash Patel are the three names that come to mind there. And I think Tulsi and RFK probably even more so than Cash. But no, I feel fairly confident at this point that all of Donald Trump's picks are probably going to get confirmed.
Yeah, it looks that way. It looks great right now. Well, thank you, Josh. We'll hear you on Saturday here on 97.1 FM Talk the Josh Hammer Show. We really appreciate it. We'll see what happens with the ceasefire.
Can't wait, Mark. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Let me just play a little bit. This was DeSantis earlier, you know, introducing Ashley Moody.
She has fought against overreaching federal agencies like the ATF, the EPA, and the FDA to protect the rights of law-abiding Americans and to prevent bureaucratic entities from encroaching on our God-given freedoms. And then when it comes to our nation's foremost adversary, China, Ashley has been integral in our state's effort to defend Florida against Chinese influence. She defended our laws preventing China from purchasing land in the state of Florida.
You know, Pam Bondi is former Florida Attorney General. She has not been Attorney General since 2019. So this, Ashley, is the current Attorney General.
What has angered me the most as Attorney General, as I've had to fight the Biden administration over the last 4 years, when we have seen policy, after rule, after financial decisions, spending out of these agencies, as the agencies have gotten bigger, as they have taken more power, as they have tried to tell the states what to do more and more and more, all that does is take the will of the people, the want of the people through their elected representatives in Congress, and turns this into a country we don't even recognize anymore.
Well, that's kind of what's happened at this point. You know, she did talk about, a lot of us are very excited about DOGE and what Elon and Vivek are going to try to achieve. She talked about spending.
I pledge to you as a United States Senator, supporting the RAINS Act, supporting any effort to rein back in our out-of-control federal agencies, make sure politics is pushed out of it, make sure we bring down spending. I am all for that, and I've got the backs of the American people, DOGE, and President Trump on that.
All right, there you go. Ashley Moody, she is going to be the new senator from Florida, replacing Marco Rubio. I'm the, you know, we're going to say goodbye. Sue, I feel a little sad because I'm not going to be here on Friday and Monday to really express my, you know, deep appreciation to the Biden administration for providing all of the material for the past 4 years.
I understand.
I mean, I almost like, I want to send flowers to KJP, right? Just to thank her for all the material. She's made my job very easy. But when you look back at this Biden administration, what do you think about?
Mainly Kennedy.
Corruption.
DEI.
Too woke.
Open borders. Lawfare that they did to President Trump and all the Americans that they tried to intimidate.
He's old.
During the presidency, he seemed not there.
A lot of what his legacy is the withdrawal from Afghanistan. In spite of the fact that he was following up the previous administration's plans, but they made mistakes and people died.
So before I play the soundbite, Sue said Kennedy, and I love that answer because Senator Kennedy from Louisiana really has been one of our favorites. And you know, I'm going to miss him. I need to look into this. Ethan might have to check because we do keep, you know, one of the challenges. We had a new show open today, and just speaking candidly, a lot of the soundbites that open the show, they're going to be dated as of Monday because they're talking about the Biden administration, like when Senator Kennedy says, the Biden administration sucks. I'm going to miss that so much. But he's a wordsmith, and I'm guessing he's going to provide us with some more material moving forward. But, you know, that... What is the legacy of this administration? I thought a lot of that summed it up pretty well.
It really did.
I'll see if I can come up with some of those Kennedy bites as we say farewell. Maybe we can work on some of that even for audio cut of the day a little later this afternoon. By the way, Senator Schmidt's going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. Kilmeade in the 5 o'clock hour. An update on the CNN defamation trial coming up at 5:07 as well. Hey, you're in the city, Sue, so it's a little different situation because you have your trash that's in the alleys. I used to live in the city. I remember that. I also remember putting things out in my trash, and then about 10 seconds later, this was one of the most amazing things. I think we've talked about that before. I would put something in the dumpster, you know, something that might be usable or reusable.
Yeah, but you don't put it in. You put it by.
To the side.
Yes.
No, right. For something like that, you're right.
You put,
but even in the circumstances that I was, even if I put something in there, I think a lot of that stuff they would go through. But the point is that you don't have. Well, maybe you do. Have they emptied the dumpsters in the last couple of weeks?
Okay. It's a complete ice rink out there in the alley and in the street.
So our local paper has a story about this, and it caught my attention because I think I have Waste Management Solutions or something, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. We have to pay for the trash pickup. Well, what I know is that last week they did not pick it up. You know, either the trash or recycling. Now, this has happened before, and the last time it happened, it was like a 2-week deal. So today is my trash day. Put it out last night. I left my house at about 1 o'clock. It was not picked up. Now, they don't always come first thing in the morning, and maybe they're a little bit behind. But what the story said in the Post, it's not just Waste Management. It's some of these other companies as well. And they include, I guess, Baldwin, Wildwood, Washington, and Franklin County. A lot of different neighborhoods. People are pissed because they're not picking this up. One of the other things that's a problem with this is, like, think about it. If they don't, and it's lucky that it's cold because things don't smell bad as they potentially could be. But if we don't get it picked up this week, then you're looking at basically 3 weeks of trash by next week.
Yeah, it's not good. And in the dumpster situation, and we've got multiple families putting stuff in there. It just gets bigger and bigger. It's not a good situation.
No, and what I love about this is frustrating because I think we're encountering this more and more. You just can't get any kind of level of customer service. So in my mind, I know this is crazy, Sue, but if you can't perform the service that I'm paying you for on a weekly basis, I shouldn't have to pay for that service, right? So you think we're going to get discounts?
Of course not.
No, are they going to kick back 25 or whatever it is a month that they charge us? No.
No, and you know what I saw today was a story somewhere that talked about the mail, of course, being the other issue, that St. Louis County residents mailed their checks to the county with their real estate taxes, and then it never got delivered.
So, well, hey, that's pretty convenient,
now,
though.
Now they've got to figure out what to do for that.
So literally, the check's in the mail, but they don't know where the check
Correct.
Is. And people are looking at their bank account saying, hey, why didn't that check get cashed?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So they're out floating in the Netherlands, or that, the Nether regions.
The hinterlands of the Nether regions.
Thank you,
right.
The hinterlands.
Exactly. There was one other thing that I was going to do here. Oh, because we're going to talk with Jessica in the next hour about the CNN trial. This is not going well for CNN. Actually,
good.
She's coming up, Jessica Kotescu at 5:07, and she's a Free Beacon reporter. We've had her on before. Nick Fondacaro also works there, and Nick's been doing a great job. I've been watching some of this, and they've been live streaming it every day. But the judge, so what happened was, one of the latest things that happened is, and I think this is all wrapping
Ooh,
up today and go to the jury.
Yeah.
So Zachary Young is the kid that is suing here. This is a $1 billion lawsuit. During the withdrawal from Afghanistan, he had, you know, business that he was doing. He was trying to help people get out of Afghanistan. CNN runs this story that says that he's a black market for profit guy. He's not really trying to help people. And, you know, they have text messages that show that the CNN producers were disparaging him, et cetera. And this happened on a Jake Tapper segment. So last week, there were reports that suggested that CNN's attorney was not connecting with the jury, and also that CNN's upper management was nervous about the possibility for a big payout. Well, so then something else happened. The lead attorney, and it's interesting, the guy's name is David Axelrod, right? It's not the other guy that we always see. He presented a document which he thought was a smoking gun. He said the plaintiff's entire case sitting right there is that after the publications, he couldn't get any work. In other words, it ruined his reputation.
Sure.
So he starts being very animated, and he points raising the copy of the lawsuit. He thinks he's won the case, I guess, but the problem is that that's not what happened, and he didn't get a job. So it was a complete lie, and the judge found out about this. I don't have time to play the audio right now.
Had he created this himself? Are you saying he created this or he misconstrued?
Yes, it was deemed that he had misled the jury. He says that he didn't, but the judge says it was a blatant misrepresentation of what the legal team was doing, implying that the security clearance, because it was all about a security clearance. It wasn't about a job. In other words, that security clearance was granted. So the lawyer's saying, see, he got a job, but there was no job connected with that. He
was
just re-upping on the security clearance. So the judge in the courtroom reads a transcript of the comments from last week in which he calls the lawsuit a fraud and insisted Young lied about being even able to earn income in the wake of the CNN report. And the judge says, you called him a liar multiple times. And he said, you owe the plaintiff an apology. I think an apology from you is clearly in order to Mr. Young for the number of times in front of this court and streamed around the world that you called Mr. Young a liar. So, quick question. How in the world is that going to turn out well for CNN? Now, one of the things that's interesting, and we can talk to Jessica about this a little bit later, there was an offer of settlement in this. So I don't know what the number was, but you know, now the other thing that could happen, at least in a case like this, I don't think it'll happen now, is, you know, the CNN attorney could say, oh yeah, let's not let this go to the jury. Let's settle right now. Well, there's going to be some big zeros on the end of that one. We'll see what happens. We'll get an update at 5:07. Sue's News coming up. Also, I want to talk about that new Noah Wyle show called The Pit. Have you seen this?
No.
Set in Pittsburgh, Sue.
Love it.
We're going to talk about it.
Get more at 971talk.com.